The Invocation by D. Vincent de Palo. Chapter 5. Encounter at the Soiree. Later that winter, nearing Christmas in fact, an unexpected visitor turned up at the apartment on Margate Street. It was early evening, and we were preparing for a soiree later that night. Emma was sorting through a pile of records, Paul was in his studio rushing to fair copy a viola part, and I was in the kitchen separating eggs to make gin fizzes.
"Forgive me,"
said a cheerful Irish brogue. I looked up to find a smiling, white-haired priest standing in the archway.
"The door was open. Would this be the Schofield apartment by any chance?"
He was in his 60s, small, fit and energetic. "Yes, Father," I said, blinking. "But why?"
"Father Jim,"
Paul bellowed, rushing in and grasping the man by his shoulders.
"What joy! Everything is okay, I trust. No one dead."
"Oh, look at you, lad. Even bigger than before. Why, you could have been a rugger had you only been born an Irishman."
He felt Paul's biceps and shoulders like a coach appraising a recruit. Something in me soured. I don't know why, but I found it off-putting, this intimacy of theirs. In all the months we'd lived together, Paul had never once spoken of religion, never once even gone to church, as far as I knew.
"So, shall I hear your confession for all love?"
Paul froze, blushing. Then Father Jim winked and slapped him on the back.
"I had you there, me boy."
Paul took the priest by the hand.
"Come, Father Jim. Can I get you a drink? Have you met my friend Soren yet?"
"No, lad, not yet. We were interrupted by a brutish, ape-like creature."
Paul grinned, and I had a flash of him, as he must have been at his confirmation. A hulking athletic boy of 13, dark-haired, ruddy-complected, and with those disconcertingly black eyes of his.
"Soren,"
he said, turning to me.
"Meet Father Jim, my ancient tutor who, for reasons known only to him, forsake his lovely parish in the County Clare to save the Alpine Schofelds from spiritual desolation."
They both laughed. I went along with it, offering my hand, but I couldn't like the man. Behind his bulbous nose and watery blue eyes lay a singular vigilance. He was sizing me up, I could tell, and I wasn't bearing well under the scrutiny. I said, "What brings you to our humble abode, Father?"
"Humble,"
he said, looking around at the expansive kitchen.
"I'd hardly call this humble, my boy."
It was then I began to hate him. I was separating the whites from yolks to make the true Ramos gin fizzes. I cracked another egg and a half-formed embryo fell out. The smell of sulphur was overwhelming. "I assure you, Father," I said, pouring the bloody fetus into the disposer, "I didn't mean it literally. Come to my mother's house in Buffalo. You'll see firsthand whereof I come by my knowledge of humble." I flicked the switch and a loud grinding filled the room. Emma walked in.
"There you go again, Soren, making us all feel so hideously privileged."
She kissed my cheek and I killed the power.
"I'm Emma,"
she said, offering her hand to the priest.
"Delighted,"
he said.
"And would you be living here too, lass?"
Emma laughed.
"Alas, no, Father. I'm afraid that would be a bit too much for my own dear papa."
"This is Father Jim, Emma,"
Paul said, putting his arm around the man.
"He taught me all I know of music and Latin and, I'm afraid it's true, women."
"Your soul to the devil, Paul Schofield."
He wriggled out from under Paul's arm and, taking it, twisted it up behind his back.
"Did you forget I also taught you wrestling, lad?"
Paul went red, straining against the impossible hold. The priest released him, and the two stood grinning at one another until, as one, they broke into a little jig.
"And dancing as well,"
Paul laughed. It was vulgar the way they cavorted. How this lurid man could be a priest, let alone tutor to such a gifted musician as Schofield, was beyond me. Emma smiled.
"Do you live in London, Father?"
"No, my dear, I'm still in Bad Kerstin, just in town for some business."
"Business," I said. "Church business?"
"No, son, banking. Of course, church business. Did you not notice the collar?"
I stirred powdered sugar into the egg whites. "I'm sorry. Of course, Father. The church is, after all, one big corporation. Isn't it?" He cocked his head.
"And what about you, Mr. Ambrose? What would be your business, then?"
I shrugged. I'm a student. Art history.
Byzantine iconoclasm,
Paul added proudly. Father Jim took out a pair of spectacles and peered closely at me.
An iconoclast? Yes, of course, I can see it now.
Emma laughed. She seemed to take it as a joke. I wasn't so sure. Paul hadn't laughed. I found that telling. The guests began to arrive and Paul excused himself. He hadn't finished preparing the music for that evening's performance. I expected the priest would beg pardon for his awkward timing and head back to his sanctuary or wherever it was they hold up when travelling. But it soon became clear he had no such intention. In fact, without leave from Paul nor myself, the creature took it upon himself to play the host. I retreated to a corner, disgusted, and watched as he greeted each guest on arrival, grasping them by the hand or arm and peering into their eyes with a disarming intensity. He's looking for something, I realized with a start. This was several parties after the one when Molino had first appeared. He'd been absent since then, thankfully. Paul and I were already deep into our Faust studies. Paul had arranged a piano-viola reduction of the Liszt symphony, in fact, which is what he was trying to fair copy, hoping to read through a movement before the night was over. He had just come out to get more supplies when Molino made his grand entrance. Dressed in black trousers, a yellow blouse, and with blue-tinted half-moon glasses perched low upon his nose, Molino looked like some sort of insect. An assassin bug, I thought. The name coming unbidden from an entomological paper I'd heard read at one of my lectures. He had a little entourage with him this time, all big-boned, gothic-looking women, pale, tattooed, and smelling strongly of some herb or oil. They had a haughty, hungry ugliness about them, which I found strangely erotic.
Well, well,
I heard Paul mutter, taking note of the new arrivals on his way back to the studio. I watched as the goth Amazons made for Father Jim. They moved in concert, like the scrum of a rugby match. And then, like a blindside flanker, Molino came scrambling round, his head bobbing with his curious gait, as if one leg were shorter than the other. He came right toward me. Odd, since we'd never actually been introduced.
You live here, right?
He demanded through a thick Italian accent. Yes. I'm...
What's he doing here?
He asked, pointing a shaking finger at the priest. I'd never been this close to Molino. His skin was like a baby's, smooth and clear, but his breath was that of an aged dog. Yet strangest of all were his eyes, protuberant and with misshapen pupils, which seemed to pour into the yellow-brown irises like sand from an egg timer. I supposed the glasses were meant to hide the defect, but he wore them too low to be effective. I looked down on him, a rare luxury for me. Why is it of any concern to you? He grabbed my wrist.
Listen, Ambrose, you don't want him here either. I can tell.
How he knew my name wasn't such a mystery. It was on the buzzer, after all. But how he guessed my feelings about the forward priest, I had no idea. He's Paul's old tutor, I said, relenting. A friend of the family.
Schofeld is religious? He hasn't dragged you to mass, has he?
That threw me. Why would Molino care if Paul had taken me to mass? No, I said, watching as Father Jim touched the sign of the cross to each of the white-faced Medusas. He's never gone to church himself as far as I know. Molino followed my gaze.
Damn it, what in hell is he doing now?
He made as if to charge the priest, then stopped.
We'll see,
he muttered, turning to the bar. It took a while for the party to heat up. Perhaps it was the presence of the collar subduing the guests, or perhaps it was the one awful movement of a wind octet which Molino blared through the hi-fi. Eventually, though, a group of guests drunk on my gin fizzes initiated what was to become one of the most astounding aleatoric improvisations of our little history. Paul's collection of instruments was vast and varied. None of them were priceless, but they were all professional quality and expertly maintained. Everyone was encouraged to try at least one. If you've never bowed a contrabass or crashed a pair of piatti, you've never truly lived. The initial drone came from an Indian santoor struck with a pair of light wooden beaters. It was a simple yet satisfying rhythm. The player wasn't a musician, but he had an innate sense of structure, of the need to build upon a solid though none too complex bass. Someone else plucked a wooden brass imbira. Another blew growling tones through a tuba. Others found various plectrum instruments, and the sound started to grow like a distant swarm of wasps. A few daring first years picked up violins and began scraping behind the bridge. Then the drums began. Djembes, udupots, a growling kamak, and then the chanting. The evening turned the corner when the goth Amazons began to swirl. Others were dancing too in the dim candlelight, but Molino's women seemed to swell and fill the floor with their bulk and curiously powerful odour. I was still in the corner by my window, nursing a gin and enjoying the spectacle, when somehow, while my gaze was occupied, Father Jim found me out and began a strained discussion, all the time shouting directly into my ear. I could smell his stale breath, even feel the tip of his nose ruffling my hair. "I can't hear you too well, Father," I kept replying, though in truth I heard him perfectly.
"Your friend,"
he was saying.
"Our friend. Our Paul is special. You know that, though, don't you? You were drawn to him. Am I right?"
"I'm sorry. What was that, Father?"
"It's funny. We're all so small and insignificant in this life, and yet we all think it revolves around us. Each one of us, the star of our own Roman Aclef."
"I can't hear you too well, Father."
"What hubris to think a plan, any plan, would take place only throughout one lifetime."
"I'm sorry. What was that, Father? A plan?"
"In the church, we take a much longer view of things. We step back, so to speak, way back. But even we can be mistaken at times. That I'm here now, well, I thought it was for Paul's sake, but now I see the arc may have been much broader all along."
"Come again, Father."
"Do you know that small round-headed boy very well?"
"Excuse me?" He pointed to Molino. I gave in. "That's Carlo Molino, another composer," I said. "He's from Italy," I added, hoping the priest would leave me in peace. Some of the girls were peeling off their sweaters, but he kept at it, a white-haired fly buzzing at the edge of my concentration.
"It was always a mystery to me why I, with my particular specialty, should have been sent to Austria, to Bad Gastein, of all places. It just didn't make any sense."
I cleaned my glasses with the tail of my shirt. Was the old fool going to sit there all night shouting into my ear? "Did you say specialty, Father?"
"Yes, I did,"
he said, pulling back and looking me square in the face. It had never occurred to me that there were specialties in the priesthood, let alone ones which would seem out of place in a small Austrian village. Perhaps he was a Holocaust specialist? "So, what was it then?" I asked. "Your specialty." The music was reaching a climax. One of many, a pounding, cathartic explosion of sound. He waited. There came the convulsive ululation, maniacal laughter, and then a sudden diminuendo, still full of polyrhythmic urgency, but much quieter. He leaned back into my ear, though it was no longer necessary, and whispered,
"Why, exorcism, of course."
A chorus of ratchets and saxophones erupted from the far corner. A bass drum rumbled with expert precision. Not everyone was a novice. The revelers screamed in ecstatic abandon and started chanting anew. This didn't surprise me, this perfect accompaniment to his statement. Synchronicity abounded during our musical reveries. Some kind of power was definitely unleashed. We were all bound up in it, all one. But the revelation did fill me with a sudden, inexplicable rage. How dare he insinuate Paul was possessed, or that he'd made some sort of pact like Faust in exchange for his genius? Anger pulsed through me, and I thought I might strike the hateful man with my glass of gin. And then a fight broke out on the dance floor. Uta, one of Molino's women, a vile-smelling German, tattooed and pierced, her red hair tightly braided to look like vines of hemp, her body thick-limbed and voluptuous, held Brandywine in a standing headlock. She was pounding his face with her free hand. Father Jim rushed over to break it up. Uta reacted blindly, an elbow to the forehead sending the priest hard to the floor. Epstein joined the fight then, but with no intention of stopping it. He was there to save his friend, and he punched the German viciously in the ear. The two other Goths were on him in seconds. They brought him down atop Father Jim and started pounding. I took a sip of my drink. Paul was crashing through the crowd. He would handle it. You have been listening to The Invocation by D. Vincent DiPaolo. Follow along with the book, available in the Kindle store. See the link in the show notes. And do stay tuned for the next chapter.